The topic today is based on a pasuk that we have in the parasha yesterday. The Torah says, we have it on the sheet, the Torah says that Hashem said to Noah that in preparation for the mabul, so he should take the various animals into the teva. So the Torah says in Perek Zion, pasuk Beis, Hashem said to him, Mikol ha-behema ha-tahora, from all of the tohar animals, which we'll see in a moment what that means, from all the tohar animals, tikach lecha shiva shiva ish v'ishto, that from all the tohar animals, Noach was instructed to take seven pairs, umin ha-behema ha-shalo tahorahi, but from the animals which were not tohar, then shnayim ish v'ishto. From them, he was only, from those animals, he was commanded to take one pair. So in other words, there was the animals that were brought into the teva, from the behemos to horos were seven pairs, from the behemos to meos were one pair. What is a behema to horo and what is a behema to mea? So Rashi says, we have it here with the arrow marked off, Rashi says, behema ha tahora ha'asido liyos tahora li Yisrael. That what this referred to the animals that were destined to be tohar for the Jewish people. Lamadnu shalomad Noach Torah. And this points to the fact that Noach obviously weren't Torah, because Hashem did not give him specific instructions. He didn't tell him this animal. They didn't have a list of all the animals and take this one and not that one. This one seven. This one two. Seven pairs. One pair. But the fact of the matter is, all Hashem said to him was the behemos tahoros, the animals which are tahar. And Rashi tells us that this means the behemos that are going to be tahar for the Jewish people. Which, and how would Noach know that? Right, this is Noach lived before the Matan Torah. So Rashi says, quoting the Chazal, Lamadnu, from this we see Shalomad Noach Torah, that Noach obviously studied the Torah. That we know. We have a tradition, it's mentioned in the Chazal in many places, that even though the Torah was first given in Har Sinai after the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, but nonetheless, the Avos and certain people from the Kadmonim, from the earlier generations, had accessible to them in some way the Torah, and it was possible for them to have studied it. We find that you had the Avos, it's mentioned in Parshas Toldos. We have a pasuk that Hashem says about Avraham Avinu, Vayishmar Mishmarti, Mitzvosai, Kukosai, V'torosai, that obviously that Avraham Avinu studied, was one who studied the Torah. We know that we had the yeshiva Shem Ve'ever, that there was a yeshiva that Yaakov Avinu went to before he went to the house of Lavan. So therefore we have this concept that the Avos had the Torah, the Kadmonim had the Torah, and thus Noach was clearly a person who was privy to the Torah, and he studied the Torah. This is what Rashi's telling us. And thus he knew which animals were the animals that were Tahoros and which were Tameos. So the question is asked, an interesting question, which is asked by the parish, one of the Mefarshim on Rashi, the Gur Aryeh, asks, it's not here on the sheet, but he asks the question that how could Noach have studied the Torah? After all, we know that a person who is not from the Jewish people is not allowed to study the Torah. And what is that based on? And that's based on the following remarkable Gemara Masechah Sanhedrin, which is on the sheet here. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Nun Tes, tells us from the second line, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, a halacha that is quite the way it's said over is very, very striking. Ove kochavim she'osek v'torah chayiv misa. That a guy who studies the Torah is chayiv misa. How do we know this? Shenemar, because it says in the pasuk Torah, we just read it on Simchas Torah, Torah tivolanu Moshe Morasha kihilas Yaakov. That the Torah was commanded to us by Moshe Rabbeinu. Morasha, that it is the inheritance of the kihilas Yaakov. It is the inheritance of the Jewish people. So the Chazal say, Morasha v'lanu, that it is a Yerusha for us, for the Jewish people, v'lo lahem. And it is not, on the other hand, a Yerusha for the Goyim. So therefore, the way this pasuk is being interpreted, the Chazal are saying that the Torah is a specific property of the Klal Yisrael. And therefore, based on this, it is unacceptable for a Goy to study Torah. So now, yeah, go ahead.
It says, Osek v'Torah, it doesn't say,
Oh, we'll get to that. Hold on. Okay, we'll soon see. So Lamaisa, so the Gemara now, I hear it's cut off on the sheet, but the Gemara proceeds to ask, V'lechshevei gabei sheva mitzvahs. So the Gemara asks, well, if that's the case, then why isn't it listed amongst the sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach? We know, after all, that there are the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, some of which were mentioned in the parasha yesterday, some of which are derived in the parashas Bereishis, but we have the sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach, which very quickly are the big three, right? The Gilui Arayos, the immorality, Shvichas Dam, and murder, Avodah Zarah, those three. And the other four, if you ever want an easy way to remember them, it's Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. Aleph is Eiver Min Achai, that a guy is not allowed to eat a limb that was removed from an animal when the animal was alive. Beis is Birchas Hashem, which is a euphemism that a guy is not allowed to curse Hashem. Gimel is Gezel, that goyim are commanded in the wars of Gzela, that they're not allowed to steal, they have to be honest in their dealings. And Dalet is Dinim, that goyim have to set up, wherever they are, wherever they may be, a system of court. There has to be a legal system. These are the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. So the seven mitzvahs, but not eight, right? There are seven. So the Gemara's question is, why isn't this one of the seven? Right? Now you're telling me here, and you're saying in very strong terms that a guy is not allowed to study the Torah, very strong terms, the Chayiv Misa. Why is it not one of the Sheva Mitzvahs? So the Gemara answers, remarkably, the Gemara says that we could answer this because the word Morasha, Kehilas Yaakov, can be interpreted two ways. The word Morasha literally means it is a Yerusha, it is an inheritance. So the Gemara says, well, if it's an inheritance, then if someone takes your inheritance, it's Gzela. It's stealing. You're taking away someone else's inheritance. You're taking someone's inheritance for yourself. And therefore, that would fall under the existing prohibition of Gezel. The Gemara says that if you interpret the pasuk that it's an inheritance, Migzel Chogazela. There is another interpretation of the pasuk, which is that the word Morasha should be interpreted Mi'orasa. Melrasa means the word betrothed, right? That the Torah is like, that the Jewish people, so to speak, are bound to the Torah, like married to the Torah, so to speak. So the Gemara says that if that's the interpretation of Morasha, so then also it's like a person, so for someone who's not privy to this to go and take it for himself would be like taking away someone's betrothed, which is also one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, right? Well, that's the Gilui Arayos. So remarkably, the Gemara says that on this basis, a guy is not allowed to study Torah. So the Gemara here continues very quickly. I apologize; it's my mistake that it wasn't on the sheet. The Gemara then asks that the Gemara says we have a quote from Rav Meir that Rav Meir said that a guy who studies Torah could be considered on the same madrega as a Kohen Gadol, and they derive this from a pasuk because the pasuk referring to the Torah says Asher Yatza Osam Ha'adam V'Chai Bohem, that it says referring to the Torah that you should do the mitzvahs in the Torah Ha'adam, that a person should do the Torah V'Chai Bohem and live by them. So the Gemara makes a deal that when it says Ha'adam, it doesn't say Jews. The pasuk says that people should study the Torah. It doesn't say specifically Jews. Says the Gemara that the pasuk, it's true that it doesn't say specifically Jews. However, Hasam b'sheva mitzvah stidhu. That pasuk, which implies that a guy is allowed to study and practice the Torah, that is referring specifically to the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. That's not referring to anything else. The sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach, theoretically, a guy who wanted to look into the Chumash to understand better the sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach, or look into even to the Chazal, to the Gemara, to understand the sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach would be allowed. However, to study anything other than that, the Gemara says in the strongest term that this is not permissible. And therefore, we have the question, based on this, the question is raised by the Mefarshim, that how is it that Noach was able to study the Torah? Noach, after all, we don't consider the Jewish nation to have begun from Noach, we consider it from Avram. So therefore, Noach was Ben Noach, right? That's what the halacha is, that he was not from the Jewish people. So how could he study the Torah? So the Mefarshim struggled to answer this question, and basically the clearest answer is would be that before the Torah was given on Har Sinai, it was up for grabs to anybody. Anybody could study it. That this pasuk, Torah Tzivo Lanu Moshe, Marasha Kilas Yaakov, that's once Moshe told it to us. Once Moshe taught it to us, then it became the Marasha Kilas Yaakov. But before that, it was available for anybody, and thus they want to explain this is how Noach was able to do it. Okay, so this is the prohibition of a non-Jew to study the Torah. Now, the prohibition goes a step further, because not only is it prohibited for a guy to study the Torah, but there's another Gemara, Maseches Chagiga, which is probably more relevant to us, and that is, the Gemara says, here we have it on the bottom of the first sheet, Va'amar Ravami. Ravami said, Ein Mosrin Divrei Torah La'ovid Kochavim. Ravami said that it is prohibited, not only is it prohibited for a guy to study the Torah, but it's prohibited for a Jew to teach the Torah to a guy. Right? Why is that? Shenemar, that's based on a pasuk which we just said in the davening, we have the pasuk, Lo asa chen l'chol goy, u'mishpatim ba'al yidom. Right? We have it, actually the first part of the pasuk the Gemara doesn't bring. Magid devarav l'yakov, the Torah says, chukov u'mishpatav l'yisrael, right? That Hashem told over his words to the Jewish people, Lo asa chen l'chol goy, did not do this to all the other nations of the world. U'mishpatim ba'al yidom, and his laws, he did not make known to them. He didn't make it known to them. So the Gemara says that this pasuk, even though it's a pasuk in Tehillim, but nevertheless, from this pasuk we learn out of halacha that since it's mishpatim ba'al yidom, since Hashem did not inform the Gentiles, did not inform the goyim of the Torah, so therefore a Jew can't do it either. And thus we have a second law here, which is not only can a guy not do it, but a Jew cannot teach the Torah to a guy either. Interestingly enough, we find that the Tosus in several places asks the question that why do we need this pasuk to say that a Jew can't teach the Torah to a guy? Why don't we simply derive it from a pasuk that we have in the Chumash? Because the Torah tells us that we have a basic mitzvah in the Torah of l'fneiver lo sitein michshol, that in front of a blind person you're not supposed to put a stumbling block. And what that is the broader definition of that is that if a person is not allowed to do something, you shouldn't put them in a situation where they have to violate a mitzvah. You should not put a person in a situation where due to the situation, they're going to have to violate one of the commandments of the Torah. So Tosus asks the question, then why do we even need this pasuk of Magid Devar of Liakov, Lo Asa Chem L'Chokai? Why do we need this for? Why don't we simply say it's L'Shnei Evel Ositem Mechshol? And Tosus answers, gives a technical answer, that this is speaking, that the Lufnei or Sitein Michshol only applies when, if not for you, he couldn't do the Avera. Says Tosus that this Gemara in Maseches Chagiga is referring to a situation where there was a guy available who was ready to teach this fellow Torah. So had you not done it, he was going to study the Torah anyway. So therefore, in terms of Lufneiv or Sitin Michshol, it doesn't apply because you didn't really facilitate it, because he would have had it without you also. Nevertheless, even in such a case, we have the prohibition of Lo'asochem l'chogayim mishpatim ba'al yidom, that Hashem did not make his laws known to the goyim, and therefore a person is not allowed to teach Torah to goyim. Now, we have to understand that you'll say, alright, so when is that ever going to come up? But so as far as goyim learning the Torah, that theoretically could come up as well. But I think all of us in the world that we live in, where we're very integrated with goyim and we work side by side with goyim and we have business dealings and so forth, and you have the holidays come up, you have to explain, well, how come, you know, the guy says, all right, I'll call you, you know, on Friday afternoon when you're speaking to a non-Jew on the phone, and he says to you, okay, I'll call you tomorrow, we'll finish the deal tomorrow. So you have to explain to him, well, you know, tomorrow is Shabbos. What's Shabbos? So you have to give some explanation. Tomorrow's Yontif. Tomorrow is this. Tomorrow's that. How come, you know, how come you, one of my relatives Ma'aseh Shehaya was working. He had a job. He actually worked his way up. He became one of the vice presidents of American Express in Manhattan, and he was very well liked. And they found out, his co-workers found out when his birthday was. They found out when his birthday was, and they wanted to make him a little celebration. So they went out and got him a cake, but they didn't get it from a kosher bakery. So they brought the cake into the office and they said, happy birthday and whatever. And, you know, they pulled out the cake. And he said to them, I'm sorry, but I can't eat this. This isn't from a kosher bakery. They didn't understand. He had explained to them. So they said, fine. They made a note of it. So the next year, as his birthday approached, there was a Carvel outlet that sells ice cream cakes. So they ordered for him a kosher ice cream cake from Carvel, and here they figured they had all the bases covered.
No.
So that afternoon, you could see it coming. So that afternoon, sure enough, at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, as things were beginning to wind down a little bit, they pulled out the cake. Happy birthday! And he said to them, I hate to tell you this, but I had a meat sandwich for lunch. So you have to. So by this time, by the time they finally got it right, the year later, they were already big poskim, right? So they obviously, now the people were knowledgeable in many halachas because of the fact. But he had to explain all this to them. Well, that's the question. So that's the question. The question is that teaching Torah? Is that teaching Torah? Is that teaching Torah? Another question which comes up, I mean, there are a lot of questions which come up today. You have, for example, if one goes into Barnes & Noble here on Biscayne Boulevard, you will see that in the Judaica section, they have Art Scroll books, Art Scroll Sfarim. In fact, sometimes you could even find an Art Scroll Gemara there. And the question would be, now obviously they're not saying who should buy it, but the book is up for sale, and anybody could buy it. And theoretically, the question would be, are you allowed to even do that? Are you allowed to make it available? You know, it's one thing if you want to sell it here in Judaica, you know, so okay, that's the farm store. Nobody's going to go in, presumably Goyim are not going to walk in there. But if you put it in an outlet which is frequented by non-Jews, so now the question is, so what's with that? So again, is that permissible? So these are some of the questions which hopefully will become clarified in this discussion. But this is the issue. It starts from Noach. Noach studied the Torah. The question is, how could he do that? Non-Jews are not allowed to study the Torah, and Jews are not allowed to teach non-Jews. So here, just to further the issue, we have, if you look at the first sheet, the second side, we have there is a Gemara, a remarkable Gemara, Maseches Bava Kamma, unbelievable Gemara. You know, you have to sort of try to picture this in your mind's eye. The Gemara says, it's marked off towards the bottom of the page, there's an arrow in the margin. The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan. The Gemara says, Ukvar Shocha Malchus Romi Shnei Sardiotos Eitel Chachmi Yisrael. The Gemara says that in the time of the Roman control of Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't say anything more specific at what particular time, but it says during that time, the Roman government sent two agents to the Chachmei Yisrael. They were always wary of the Torah. They knew that the Torah was the lifeline of the Jewish people, and they wanted to know what exactly does it say, right? This has always been an issue throughout the generations. We have Svarim today that came out of Europe, which were censored. We had the Sefer, most notably the Sefer Aruch HaShulchan, which is one of the great Sfarim in Halacha. If one reads it, any time he says a Halacha pertaining to the laws of Goyim that distinguishes between a Jew and a Goy, he always says it doesn't apply nowadays. It was only in the old days, which isn't so. But the reason why they wrote it that way was because of the fact that the Sfarim were under heavy scrutiny. They were being censored because they were always looking to see, you know, what the Jews are saying about us. So this goes back a long way. So we have it here that the Romans sent two agents to the Jewish people, and they said, Lamdunu Taraschem, teach us the Torah. So the rabbis went ahead, the Chachmei Yisrael, Karu Vishanu Vishileshu. So the rabbis taught them the whole Torah. They taught them everything. They taught them not only the Chumash, but the Tanakh and the Mishnah. Everything. They taught them everything there was to know. So the Gemara says, "B'shas k'tirasan amru lahem." So the Gemara says that when they came to leave, however long this took, in other words, they taught them Kol HaTarakula. Kol HaTarakula, they taught them every single Gemara, everything. So it says, when they came to leave, Amru Lahem, so they said, "Dikdaknu b'chol taraschem." We have gone through, we have scrutinized your entire Torah, the emesu, and it's all true, chutz midavar zeh, except for this thing, sha'atem omrim, we have found, we appreciate what it says in the Torah, but there's one halacha that we feel doesn't make sense. What is that halacha? This is how it ties into Bava Kama. Sha'atem omrim, because you, the Jewish people, say, shar shel Yisrael, shenagach shar shel Kanani potter. Because we have a pasuk, right? The Torah discusses in Parashas Mishpatim the laws of damages. So it says, what happens if a Jew should damage a guy? So the way it's phrased is, what happens if the animal of a Jew, if the ox of a Jew should gore, if one ox should gore another ox? So when the pasuk says, when the Torah says that law, the Torah says, ki yigach shar ish es shar reyehu. If one ox will gore another ox, but the Torah uses the word reyehu. The word reyehu means, in halacha usually means, it's peer. It's peer. Now what does it mean, it's peer? How do you have oxes that are peers to each other? So the interpretation of the Chazal is that what it means is the shar that's owned by a peer. Meaning that the law that of the damage of a shar only applies if a Jew damages a Jew. But if a Jew, damages a guy, so then one could argue that it shouldn't apply because that's not what the word reyehu is. But so the halacha is shar shel Yisrael shenagach shar shel ovei kochavim is pater. But then there's another halacha. The other halacha is shel kenani shenagach shar shel Yisrael. However, it says elsewhere in the halacha that if the shor of a guy, if the ox of a guy were to gore the ox of a Jew, then bein tam bein mud mishalim nezek shalim. Then the halacha would be that the guy would have to pay. So they asked the following question. Now listen to this, pretty good for going. So they asked for manavshach. So they said, no matter how you look at this, it doesn't make sense. Why? Because ireyehu dafka. Because if the word in the pasuk reyehu is going to be taken as a literal, as a specific clause that it has to be the shor of a peer, so then if that's the case, if a guy's shor gores a Jew's shor, he shouldn't have to pay either, because of the fact that the whole law is only when a shor owned by one person gores the shor of his peer. So if a guy is not a peer, mamonoshach, if a guy is not a peer, so then he shouldn't be a peer on either side of the equation. So then, if a Jew should damage a guy, he wouldn't have to pay, but if a guy should damage a Jew, he shouldn't have to pay either. This is the question that they asked. They said, and if you're going to tell me that the word reyehu is lav dafka, if you're going to tell me that the word, that the reference of a peer is not to be taken so literally, so then you should have to pay in both cases. This is the question they asked. However, they said, "V'davar zeh ein anu modin also l'malchus." But this distinction that's made between Jews and not Jews, we will not report this to the Roman authorities. In other words, when we go back to Rome and they ask us, "Did you find anything in there that was slanted against us?" So even though this was a nes, that even though in fact they found something that was very much something, a halacha, which could have been the source of great problems, nevertheless they said that we're not going to say this over. And we're not going to say this over. In case you're wondering, this is the way the Gemara ends. In case you're wondering what's the answer to that question, right? So why, they have a good question, what's the answer? So on the top of this page, the Gemara says that really the word reyehu is specific, and therefore a guy should not have to pay even if he damages a Jew. However, there's a special penalty that was put on them for the fact that they did not accept the Torah and also did not even observe the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. The Gemara says this on the sixth line from the top, and therefore there was a penalty put on them that if they damage a Jew, they have to pay. But that was the answer to that question. That's a different discussion. But the fact of the matter is, this was a true story which took place between the Chachmei Yisroel and the Roman agents. So if you look at the bottom of the page in the Tosfos, the second to the last Tosfos on the page, I have it marked off, Karu v'shanu v'shileshu. So Tosfos right here on the spot asks the question. Tosfos says, what's going on? How could you teach them? How could they teach them the Torah? It says, doesn't the Gemara say, Hamalami Torah Ovid Kochovim, Ovid Basay, the Magid Zavar of Liakov, right? How could he teach the Torah to the Goyim? It shouldn't be acceptable. They should not have been able to, when these people came, when these Roman emissaries came, they should have said, we're sorry, we can't teach it to you. So, as you could well imagine, Tosfos answers that they had no choice. That this was done, Tosfos answers, V'yesh Lomar, Zabal Karchav Osu Al Pidivei HaMoshe. That this was put to them as a life or death type of thing. It was a threat, meaning that you have to, when they arrived at the Chachmei Yisrael, they were told, we were sent to study the Torah and you must teach it to us. It wasn't like, you know, can you please teach it to us? It was, you had to. Says Tosfos, flown as chayva wimsaratzman. For that, they didn't have, there's no obligation for a Jew to give up his life for this, so therefore, they were allowed to teach the Torah to the Goyim in this situation. But the obvious inference is that had it been anything short of this, then they would not have been allowed to teach the Torah to the Goyim. Right? So in other words, here you see the extent to which this goes. In other words, you say, well, all right, you know, it's not the biggest deal in the world, so we'll teach the Torah to the Goyim. It's, you know, all right, we have many other mitzvahs. But here you see that apparently they took this very seriously. Because had this not been a life or death situation, they would, apparently from Tosfos it seems, that they would have said, sorry, we can't teach you. Yes?
Another question in my mind is why did they have to do such a comprehensive job?
Right. So in other words, that's true. In other words, you see here that they taught them, this is a very important point, because they taught them everything. They taught them every last thing. They went through, I mean, this question that they asked, you know, today if a boy in the yeshiva asked this question, we would say, wow, that was very good that you thought of that question, right? And here, they were so immersed in the, they so much got the hang of it that, in other words, obviously they were taught on a very, very extensive level. Yeah, so we'll see about that. But the fact of the matter, we'll see where that makes a difference. But the fact of the matter is, Tosfos says that at the end of the day, that this would have been, it was not Yehoreh Kol Yavar, they didn't have to give up their lives, but other than that, they couldn't do it. So this makes it all the more, that now you see that the story gets worse and worse, that not only can't you tell them anything, but you couldn't tell them anything. Even if, let's say, a co-worker, you'll say, well, you know, I work with Goyim, I live amongst Goyim, so I have to tell them something, you know. But it seems from this Tosfos that if it had it not been a life or death thing, they wouldn't have told them. They would not have told them. So that makes it almost impossible for us. So what could we possibly do based on this? So to begin to approach this in a way that we could, that it comes, you know, a manageable situation. So I would refer you here, first and foremost, to on the second sheet, the first side, there is a commentary on this Gemara, one of the basic Mefarshim. It was written by Rav Shlomo Luria, who was known as the Marshal, one of the early Achronim, lived in the 16th century, who wrote amongst his writings, he wrote a book of halacha called Yamshel Shlomo. Now, Yamshel Shlomo he went through a number of Masechtas and went through the Gemaras and tried to derive the halacha from it. So, the Yamshel Shlomo apparently lived not that long after the situation. He lived in the 16th century, so it was not that long after the expulsion of Jews from Spain. And prior to that time, it was known that the Jews in Spain for many years lived a very good life. And it was referred to as the Golden Age, even though it began to break down, you know, long before 1492. But nevertheless, there was a lot of integration between Jews and Goyim. Apparently, there was assimilation too. But it seems that there were situations where Jews taught Torah to non-Jews, where they studied together. There was such a integration that they studied Torah together. So the Yamshel Shlomo here on the sheet, it's on the second column, on the top paragraph. So he mentions that he heard about Jews who lived in Spain and also Jews who lived in Eretz Yishmael and some of the Arab countries who studied Torah together with Goyim, and they were paid to do this, they were paid to teach the Torah to Goyim even, And he says that if you read this Gemara and you read this Tosfos, you see clearly a rebuke. You see clearly, you're not allowed to do such a thing. You see how far it goes. You see how far it goes. So he says, woe to those people who do that. Oy lahem, lo'osam shenimtsu b'medina svard, v'lo'ez v'eretz Yishmoel, halomdim Torah Hashem im ha'umos, who study the Torah together with non-Jews, b'avur hana'osam v'tashlum eschoren, because it's for their benefit or because they get paid to do so. So, this obviously fits in with what we've been saying. But here, we have the first break, the first crack, the first beginning of a window that could open for us. Because he proceeds to say that what's the problem with doing so? See, the Gemara just tells us that a guy is not allowed to do it because it's the property of the Jew. The Torah is God's gift to the Jewish people, and therefore it's for Jews and not for Goyim. A Rosh HaKilus Yaakov, a guy cannot touch it. Well, also Goyim, Mishpatim Baal Yadam, you cannot teach it to Goyim, which in a sense gives us a greater appreciation for the Torah. But the fact is, the Marshal here went out on a limb and said that he thinks that it really runs a little deeper than this. Because he said that the problem with teaching this to Goyim is, he says, if you go down the line, he says, Ki achar kach he mahapchem l'minus. He says, because the potential of studying the Torah together with Goyim is that for whatever reason the Torah will not be interpreted properly, and it's going to cause a distortion of the Torah. And therefore, it's going to cause even Jewish people to go off the proper path, because there'd be an interchange of ideas, and now you hear what he has to say, right? And therefore, it could be that now you're hearing something from someone who's not oriented to the Torah, but you're in an open dialogue, and it may cause a person to go off the proper path. And he says further, he says, "Hashem Moser HaTorah B'Kabbalah L'Moshe L'Omer L'Yoshua." Hashem taught the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu to give it to Yeshua, and Yeshua is the Kenim. V'lo hiniach lichtov haTorah shebal peh kidei shelo yahavchu l'minus. He quotes here a medrash, which is in the medrash called Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, where it says a remarkable thing. The medrash says, why is it that the Torah shebal peh, that the oral Torah had to be oral, could not be written down? He says, because of the concern that if it would be written down and it would be open for anybody, so it would be open for interpretation by anybody, right? Not necessarily by a person who's trained, not necessarily by a person who has a Mesorah, but it's just there, it's up for interpretation. And as we know in our time, right, that nothing is sacred, everything is scrutinized, and everything is critiques and even criticisms of all the books, everything that we have. That's the attitude that we find today. So therefore, had the Torah Shebal Peh been left lying around, so to speak, that anybody could pick it up, it would result in the distortion of the Torah, that the Torah could possibly it would result in all kinds of new ideas coming in, and ultimately the Torah being changed and distorted. So says the Medrash Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, that therefore, this is the reason why Hashem did not write down the Torah Shebal Peh. The Torah Shebiksav is very, the written Torah is very sketchy, right? It's very vague. The Torah speaks about mitzvahs, but very often you read in the Torah mitzvah, you don't know what it's all about. You must look in the Mishnah, you must look in the Gemara. There's no interpretation. So even though it's true that the Torah Shebiksav has been distorted, but ultimately the lifeline of the Jewish people is the Torah Shebal Peh. Because the oral Torah, the Mishnah, the Gemara, that's where all halacha comes from. That's where even the agados, the stories that are mentioned there, are all part of the Torah Shebal Peh. We're supposed to learn from those things. If that, says the Mashal, if that's going to be left open for anybody to pick up and read, if that's going to be left open for even the Goyim, then it's going to be Yahavchu L'minus. Then it could end up in being distorted in a terrible way. And therefore, the Marshal was writing this in criticism of those who went ahead and taught Torah to Goyim. However, what the good news that comes out of this, in other words, if you read this Marshal, if you read this Yamshel Shlomo, so it sounds like very stinging criticism. It sounds like he's writing, you know, very vitriolic, a whole speech against those who teach the Torah to Goyim. However, there's one thing we could infer from this. And that is that he says, he seems to imply very strongly that the prohibition of teaching Torah to Goyim applies to the Torah Shebaal Peh and apparently not to the Torah Shebiksav. Because in his explanation for why Torah could not be taught to the Goyim, he quotes the Medrash in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, which says why the Torah Shebaal Peh wasn't written down. And apparently that's what he's basing his argument on. So it would seem that had that okay, that's true about the Torah Shebaal Peh. The Torah Shebiksav, the written Torah, was put out there for everybody. Originally it was only in the Lashon HaKodesh, but the truth is, even originally we find that it was translated into 70 languages. We have in the Yeshua translated into 70 languages, and the Torah eventually, you know, was we have in the Gemara that Talmai, that in the time of Talmai they had to translate the Torah. So the Torah Shebiksav apparently, you see from this mashal, would not be an issue. And we see this also later poskim. We have a tshuva from the Meshiv Dover that was written by the Netziv of Volozhin, was written in the late 1800s, where also somebody asked him a very interesting shiloh. Now listen to this. You think we have tough shilohs today. So in the year 1882, the question was sent to the Netziv that there were a group of Karaites that were in the world, I think they may even still be today. Karaites were a deviationist group of Jews who did not accept the Torah Shebaal Peh. They only accepted the Torah Shebiksav, which is unacceptable. It's one of the Rambam's 13 fundamental beliefs that the Torah Shebaal Peh is Torah Min HaShamayim. And so this was a deviationist movement that was never accepted, but nonetheless they functioned as a group. And they functioned until recently, and I once actually had a discussion with a member of the Karaite community years ago in Eretz Yisrael, but I think there's still even maybe some today. But in 1882, they contacted a sofer, a religious fellow, and they wanted that he should, they wanted to commission him that he should write a Sefer Torah for them. That he should write a Sefer Torah for them. And this guy, you know, was a God-fearing person, and he thought to himself, you know, maybe I shouldn't be doing this because these people, they're not accepting the Torah Shebaal Peh, so maybe I shouldn't help them out, maybe I shouldn't be writing the Sefer Torah for them. So he contacted his Rav, who was, apparently this story, I couldn't track down exactly where this happened, but his Rav was the author of, we have Svarim, an encyclopedia of the Gemara, which is called Stei Chemed. So the author of the Stei Chemed was contacted by this sofer. What should he do? And he cited a ruling. I don't know exactly. I couldn't track down where it came from, but he cited an earlier ruling that said that these people should be treated like goyim in this regard, and therefore the same way ein mosrin Torah l'goyim. The same, obviously, the Jews, in the sense that if you know, you would have to help them and save them and etc. They're still Jewish people. Yisrael afal pi shochat Yisrael, or a Jew, even who sins, is still considered. No one ever loses their status of a Jew. But as far as this area is concerned, as far as this halacha is concerned, can you give them Torah? Can you teach them Torah? So he cited a ruling that said that they should be treated the same as non-Jews. And therefore, this sofer was told that he probably, the Rav who said it wasn't 100% sure, but he said he doesn't think they could write it, and thus the Shiloh was sent to the Netziv in Volozhin. So the Netziv writes, it's in the Shas HaTshuvas Meshiv Dover, I happen to have a copy of it here. I wasn't able to get it onto the, I missed the deadline for the Maror Makomos, for the sheet, but in the Meshiv Dover, Chelek Beis Siman Ayin Zayin, he says there that he says it's no problem. He says absolutely you're allowed to write the Sefer Torah for them. Why? Because he said, and he agreed with this Yamshel Shlomo, he said because the whole prohibition is to teach them Torah Shebaal Peh. There is no prohibition to teach them, even a goy, there would be no prohibition to teach Torah Shebiksav. And therefore, since the Sefer Torah is Torah Shebiksav, so the Netziv Paskin, that there's no problem, you could write a Sefer Torah for them. So thus we see two sources that held that the Torah Shebiksav is not included in the ban of teaching Torah to Goyim. So already, that makes life a little bit easier, because of the fact that so now things which are in the Chumash, which are readily available to Goyim, well, Shabbos, you know, the fact that there is a Jewish day of rest, that the Jews don't do Malach on Shabbos, that's mentioned in the Chumash. So therefore, it's true, if you want to explain to him an intricate analysis of why you're not allowed to pick up the phone when he calls you, that would involve the Torah Shebaal Peh, right? Because we don't find this in the Chumash. But if you just simply said to a guy that, I'm sorry, tomorrow's my day of rest, I'm not allowed to do certain forms of work and it's my Sabbath, it's Shabbos, so it seems from these poskim that would not be a question, that would be mutter. Okay. But the question still remains, what happens if you have to go further than that? So we have here, I try to make it quick, we have here the Marsha says on the Gemara Masechet. Now I just want to raise also another issue which I forgot to mention earlier, which we'll deal with hopefully at the end, which is included in the question of can you teach Torah to Goyim, would also be the question of what about a person who's coming to convert, right? What about a person who's coming to convert, would that be included also? So we'll deal with that soon. But anyway, as the Marsha here in the Gemara Masechet Chagiga, the Marsha says the following thing. The Marsha asks a question on the Gemara. Now, if you remember, the Gemara that we have printed on the first side, on the first sheet, the Gemara said, "Ein mosrin divrei Torah lo vitachavim." You're not allowed to give over Torah to Goyim. So the Marsha asks, why was it phrased that way? Why does it say, "Ein mosrin," you're not allowed to give it over? It should say, "Ein melamdim," you're not allowed to teach. The word for teaching would be melamdim. Right, a teacher is called a malam, and ain't malam, it's hardly Yisrael. Why is it phrased in this unusual manner? So the Marsha says that the answer to this is because mosrin means that you're not to give something over. Malam implies less than that, meaning that the Marsha is telling us also, similar to what we've been saying, that when we talk about not teaching Torah to Goy, to just simply teach him something, a simple thing that doesn't require a giving over, that doesn't require an in-depth analysis, that would be mutter. That would be mutter. When it comes to something which is mosrin, which you have to give over, you have to give it over with your heart and soul, you have to explain it passionately, intricately, that is something that you're not allowed to do. And the Marsha says that would be true even by the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. In other words, even were a guy to say, I want to know, I know one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach is Gezel, so I want to know the laws of Tzela. So I'm going to open up the Gemara Maseches Bava Kamma and study all the laws of Tzela. So that wouldn't be right, because you're allowed to teach him, but you're not allowed to be Moser. This is what he says. You're not allowed, he says on the second to last line, he says that the Tamam v'sod ha'inyanim. The reason and the sod ha'inyan, meaning the foundation of the issue, the deep analysis of the halacha, you're not allowed to give. So perhaps this might suggest that it may give a bit more leeway, because it's unclear. The truth of the matter is that it's unclear exactly what the Marsha means when he says, Tom, if you read, I'm just going to save time, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but if you read it, you'll see that he says that the main issue is to give over like the fundamental understanding. So perhaps, and some posts can point to this, and Sefer Tzitz Eliezer points to this, to suggest that one could say that this gives us a little more leeway, that if you had to explain, if the guy didn't understand. In other words, in my relative situation, when they brought him the ice cream cake on his birthday, so what's he going to sell him? What's he going to tell him? He said, well, it says in the Torah, thou shalt not cook thy kid in milk. Right? So they'll say, I'm not cooking my kid in milk. What are you talking about? Right? What do you mean, thou shalt not cook my kid in milk? Right? What does that have to do with this? Yeah. So obviously, you have to give a more in-depth discussion of that. You have to say, well, milk refers to any dairy product, which includes ice cream, right? And when it says gedi in the pasuk, "Savashel gedi b'chalev imo," it refers to anything that is meat or even chicken, midrabanan. I don't know what he had for lunch, but whatever it was. So you're going to have to give. If not, to simply quote the pasuk isn't going to do it. But to give a little more of an explanation, which is not in the Chumash, But yet, it's not really the Yisod HaIn. You're not going into the depths of it. You're not getting into what we call in yeshivas the lumdis. You're not getting into the whole issue, all the Rav Chaims. You know, you're not discussing all the deep analysis that we find in the Mefarshim. You're just telling them a basic, superficial, you know, just you should have enough. Okay, I get it. Okay, there's a prohibition in the Torah. You're not allowed to do these, because this is not Mefarsh in the Torah. Right, but nevertheless, it seems from this Masha that would give us a little more leeway also. That's what it seems. Okay. So thus, it comes out that as far as teaching Tanakh to a non-Jew, it sounds like from the consensus of the Poskim is that it would be Mutter. The Torah Shebal Peh is really Usser, but it seems from the Masha and the understanding, Ein Moser in Divrei Torah L'Aklam, that it really, if you just were giving a very basic, simplistic explanation of a law, you know, if for some reason a guy were to observe a Jew building a sukkah, and he would ask, how come you have to make it that way? Which, you know, it probably is going to involve saying something from the Torah Shebal Peh. Right, so it sounds like as long as you're not getting into the deep discussions in the Gemara, the intricate discussions and analysis of the Shas, and you're just saying over a simple thing, it sounds like that should be okay also. I would just point out that interestingly enough, amazingly, this halacha of not teaching Torah to a guy is not mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, and people struggle to explain why that is. But I saw in the Tshuva of Moshe Feinstein that he writes that because of that, we really don't have clarity in this law. So therefore, everyone is trying to make inferences and, you know, well, yeah, if you read the Masha, you see this, and if you read the Am Shul Shlomo, you see that. So obviously, if a person did not have to do this, it would not be a good idea to go ahead and have a class for Goyim. Right, but we're speaking now. If it comes up, so what do you have to say something? So it sounds like these things you could do. Now, as far as Fagerim goes, I'll try to wind it down. As far as Fagerim goes, so here we have, it's on the final sheet, we have the famous Gemara of Hillel, right? So the Gemara says, in the Gemara Masech HaShabbos on Daf Lamed Aleph, so the Gemara says that, let's see where it is, it's marked off on the top line here of the sheet. Shuv Maisa ben Achri Echad, there was a guy who was walking past the Beis Medrash, and he overheard when they were studying Parshas Tetzaveh, when they were discussing the laws of the Big Day Kahuna, so he heard that the Kohen got to wear the Choshen, the breastplate, and the Ephah, all the Big Day Kahuna. And it sounded very impressive to him. So it says that he immediately came into the Beis Medrash, and he said, who gets to wear these things? So that he was told, the Kohen Gadol. So the Gemara says, so he said, all right, fine. So he was very inspired by this, the opportunity to wear very prestigious clothing. So he said, I'm going to go ahead and convert in order that I should become a Kohen Gadol. And this is about sincerity, right? He heard that that somebody gets to wear all these fancy clothes. He said, perfect, I want that person to be me. So he went in, what's that? Right. So he went into the Beis Medrash and he said, I'm ready to convert and should become a Kohen Gadol. So the Gemara says he went to Shammai, and as we know, Shammai threw him out. Didn't want to hear about it, but he went to Hillel, and it says, so Hillel went ahead and said to him that a few lines down, so Hillel said to him, you should just know that the Kohen Gadol was like the leader of the Jewish people. And in order to be the leader, you have to know the laws of the people. So therefore, before I go ahead, I say, I'll accept your application for Geirus. I'll accept the application. I'm not going to put the reject on it. I will accept it. But you should just know that we can't do this as prerequisites. You want to take the advanced course. You have to take the prerequisite first. First, you have to know the laws. So he said, go study the laws. And we'll study the laws. And he told the guy, go study the laws. So it says, sure enough, the guy got up to the pasuk in Parshas Bamidbar where it says, "V'hazor hakarev yumas." It says that if a non-kohen enters in to the certain parts of the Beis Hamikdash and the Kodesh Hakodesh, wherever, so then he's chayav misa. So when he saw that pasuk, he said, "Whoa!" He says that he made a kal v'chomer. He said, "If this is true even by Jews, so it's certainly going to be true by me in my situation. So therefore, he said that he realized that it didn't apply to him. And in the end, nevertheless, he was still interested in converting. The end of the story was that Hillel converted him, and he praised Hillel because Hillel broke it to him in such a manner that he was able to embrace the Torah in truth. And Hillel dealt with him despite his original insincerity. Hillel guided him rather into a position where he became sincere. This is the Gemara. What's that? He didn't push him away. Hillel didn't push him away. Shammai pushed him away. So the Marsha on this Gemara. So the Marsha, which again missed the deadline for the photocopies here, but the Marsha on this Gemara goes into a whole lengthy discussion how this was mutter. How is it mutter for this man? Hillel told the guy should go learn. How could he do that? The ain motion different Torah la'akum. So the Marsha basically comes out, or a guy shouldn't learn it himself either. It seems here the guy learned it himself. So the Marsha comes out that for Geirus purposes, it would be mutter. That, in other words, if the person is studying the Torah with the intention to convert to Judaism, so then the Marsha says that these rules don't apply. The rule only applies to teach it to a guy, that the guy wants to have it for his own intellectual knowledge. But if the person is for the purpose of conversion, the Marsha rules that he's allowed to do it, and even though the ruling of the Marsha is disputed, there is a tshuva in the Rebbe Akiva Eiger, in the first volume of Rebbe Akiva Eiger, where he disagrees with the Marsha, he has questions on the Marsha, but nonetheless, this seems to be the point that people rely on, that they would teach Torah to a non-Jew for the purpose of conversion. But the truth be told, in light with what we've said, really it shouldn't be such an issue anyway, because you don't have to learn with him the deep sugyas in the Gemara. You don't have to do that. The person should convert to Judaism. All you need is to tell him the basic mitzvahs. That you could do anyway, because what's in the Chumash, we already said the consensus of the Poskim is not a problem. What's in the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim is not a problem. And even according to the other Marsha, if you just tell him basic superficial laws without getting into real intricate analysis, that would also be okay. So therefore, really, when it comes to Geirus, it doesn't sound like it should be such a big issue either, but I think commonly this is what's relied upon, that it would be allowed. The story of Hillel would be the basis for that. For conversion purposes, one could teach Torah to a guy. Okay, so thus we've covered what you could tell a person, and as well for the purpose of Geirus. So I just want to end off with just a couple of points. There's a very interesting tshuva we have in the Igros Moshe. Moshe Feinstein wrote a tshuva in the year 1963 to a yeshiva student who had the following situation. The yeshiva student had it doesn't say exactly who it was, an uncle or somebody in the family who was dating a non-Jewish woman. And they went to a Reform rabbi who performed an improper conversion, but obviously they thought it was good. And lo and behold, this couple, you know, proceeded as if they were Jewish. And now they were coming to this guy's house for the Pesach Seder. They were coming for the Pesach Seder to this fellow's house. And the Pesach Seder, obviously, the Haggadah is going to be said out loud. And this fellow is going to be, I guess his parents weren't so knowledgeable, and he's a yeshiva student, so he's going to be conducting the Seder, and he's going to be saying all the Divrei Torah. And like we know, he came home from yeshiva with a notebook filled with all the Divrei Torah that he heard from his teachers, and he wants to have a nice Seder. And the problem is that sitting at the Seder is going to be this relative with his non-Jewish wife. So he asked Rav Moshe Feinstein, is there a problem with this? Is there a problem? Does he have to hold back? Does he have to tell them they can't come? Obviously, these are not good options. So what should he do? So Rav Moshe here Paskin, he said that it's pashut to him, that it's mutter for him to say whatever he's going to say, doesn't have to hold back anything. Why? Because he says that the whole prohibition of teaching Torah to Goyim is when your intention is to give it over to Goyim. In other words, ein mosrin divrei Torah la'akum, that means that I'm going to call a class of non-Jews and I say, in case you were wondering what the Torah is all about, you know, in order that there should be, you know, interfaith dialogue and good relations between Jews and non-Jews, so we'll give you a basic education in Talmud. Talmud for, you know, you have all kinds of Gemara classes, Talmud for non-Jews. Yeah.
Banner University has a Talmudic class. From people teaching there.
And from people teaching there. Okay. So it could be. So Rav Moshe's psak, I see that, I don't know, because I don't know. It's not a Jewish college, you know. So therefore, if it was in a Jewish college, you know, I don't know if in YU or in Turo, what the policy, if a guy enrolled, they probably would have to accept him, I would imagine, right? So, but you'll say if they're going to sit in the shir. So the answer is, that's Rav Moshe's psak. Your intention is to teach it to the Jews. Your intention is not to teach it to the guy. The guy shouldn't be there. He says, to the contrary, this guy, if we have the halacha, the guy is not allowed to study Torah, so the guy shouldn't be there. So by this woman sitting down, she's causing the problem. You're not causing the problem. You're teaching the Torah to Jews. So if a non-Jew will attend, it's not a problem so long as you were not intending to give it over to non-Jews. This is his psak, which I think creates a great window for all of us, because what that means is that today, in the world today, unfortunately, we have a lot of situations like this where all kinds of things and people come over and all kinds of shilas. You know, he writes in the tshuva, he says, you better make sure she doesn't touch the wine. You know, that, you know, by the Seder, that's not a small thing. He said, but the fact is, other than that, you want to say over the Haggadah, you want to say over all your Divrei Torah, no problem. This is the psak of Rav Moshe Feinstein. So I would just, I'm sorry.
One exception, when you get up to Shvach Hamas Al-Babuyim, you translate love and
Right. Shvach Hamas Al-Adoyim, right, you would have trouble with that one, right. Maybe when you open the door, you just tell them it's time to leave. But the fact of the matter is, just in conclusion, I would just say that this psak would explain, I believe, how our scroll could make their books available in even a place like Barnes & Noble or Amazon or any of these other companies, which I think you're able to. They must have some, I don't know for sure, but they can get it, right? On all these sources, all these outlets can get you the Art Scroll books. So you say, how could that be? How's that allowed? The answer is, we wrote it for the Jews. If a guy wants to go ahead and buy it, that has nothing to do with us. And finally, this would also be a great solution for a problem which unfortunately exists in Klal Yisrael today. It's been already for a while that in the day schools, Baruch Hashem, we have day schools all across the country, but they're, you know, different ways that the schools are run. And sometimes you have a community school where the goal is that they have to take in everyone in the community. And you have situations, a common problem, where you have, you know, you have people walking around who were told by, you know, Reform rabbis that because the father was Jewish, that they're Jewish, even though the mother isn't Jewish, and these kids are then sent to day schools. And now the question is, if you're going to teach in a school like that, you have kids are guys sitting in the class. So what are you going to do? Even the Gemara Shir. Right, and he moves up the ladder, right? So he starts off in the first grade, but eventually he'll get up to the higher grades. Right, now you're teaching already Gemara, this is already the real deal. And now you may even, depending, you know, the Rebbe may want to say over something that there's some pshat that he heard. So what are you going to do? So you say, I have guy sitting in the class, or a guy sitting in the class. What am I going to do? So again, we have this sock from Rav Moshe that I'm not teaching the guy. I'm teaching the Jews. I came here to teach the Torah to the Jews. If a guy is going to come into the class, I don't have to throw him out. I don't have to throw him out. He came to the class. I'm that. But ein mosrin divrei Torah la'akum. I do not. I am not giving over the Torah to the guy. My intent is not to give it over to the guy. If a guy is going to sit there, there would be no problem. I think this pretty much covers all of the relevant cases. Getting back to the original question of Noach, I think for that we would have to say, you could theoretically say that the Behemoth Sahoros is just in the Chumash, so the whole question doesn't begin in light with what we've seen, but, the Mefarshim seem to say that this prohibition began with the Matan Torah, but these are some of the ins and outs of the laws of not teaching Torah to them.